And welcome to the Investor Coaching Show. I'm Paul Winkler, talking about money, investing, financial planning. Just things that are interesting out there that are happening right now in the financial world. That's what this show is about. You know, just talking about... There's so many things to talk about. This precious metal scheme. Let's see. Now, here is something that I talked about many times. This, I thought, was fascinating. I don't know if fascinating is the right word. word choice can be everything, can't it? Precious metal scheme used fear and Facebook to trick older conservatives out of their savings. You know, I want to bring this up simply because of the fact that your emotions, as I often say, can be used against you very easily. And I saw this so much over the past 10 plus years that I just feel compelled to bring it up when I see it to try to prevent it in the future. Because I'm telling you, man, I don't want to call them arguments, but more, you know, just time taken to try to talk people off the ledge when it came to investing back in 08 and 09, 2000. I mean, throughout the entire Obama presidency, I saw a lot of this. It wasn't just back in 08, back in those, you know, 2000 and 2001, 2002. I've seen this stuff forever, and it just doesn't ever end. But it says, while browsing through Facebook one day, in 2017, a widow from Kentucky clicked on a series of links that led her to sign up form about buying silver. One of the Facebook pages, she told the magazine, appeared to be associated with Fox News. She said, I didn't think anything about it or anything. She says, it was just asking if you wanted more information, said Cheryl, 71 years old, who requested not use her last name. Within 24 hours, Cheryl got a phone call from a representative of the company called Chase Metals. And I remember seeing their ads everywhere. I do remember this. She said that right away. The caller launched into a conversation about which Fox News programs she watches. So they're trying to bond with her a little bit. Hey, what do you watch? What do you like? You know, what are you into? And it kind of reminds me of the insurance agent walks in the house and they're instructed to walk over to the bookcase and look at the pictures and say, oh, who's this in this picture? And, you know, bond with the person, right? All psychological. They're trained to do this. I mean, just literally trained to do this kind of stuff. I'm giving you the backside. And I always, people tell me, I love that you just tell us all the, like, the backstory of things and you know, what goes on inside the industry that you never see. Because I think you need to know this stuff. You need to know how people play on you. Her interest at the time was casual, but so then he mentioned that he had seen that she was interested in these precious metals, right? And, you know, silver and gold and all that stuff. And, you know, we're coming up on the season where you're going to be hearing that in a Christmas cartoon, right? Her interest at the time was casual, but the salesman was persistent, calling her again and again. And that drives me nuts. You see that? You know, they'll wear you down. They talked over several days, she said. He asked about her family, you know, learning that she's a retired nurse and she was raising two of her grandchildren. So he found out the whole backstory. And it was according to Cheryl, in order to convince her to invest in silver, the salesman talked about how Donald Trump's policies would devalue the dollar. And if I had a dime for every email I got, and every phone call I got from people and asking me about this, is it going to devalue? Is this going to happen? And I would have to explain how currencies worked and what the dollar, you know, how is the value is derived. Oh, it's a fiat currency, Paul. It's going to go under. And it's going to be worthless. And they're going to come on. There's going to be a new currency. And then China is going to have a new reserve currency. They're going to take over a reserve currency status and blah, blah, blah. And I'd have to explain that away. And go, no, this is what's going on here. And you all heard this. I mean, you know this. I'm not telling you anything new. He spoke about a supposed law that would enable lawmakers to confiscate American savings. Saw this, too. They're going to confiscate, they're going to come in, they're going to take your stuff, and it's going to be a big tax, and the way here's how they're going to do it. And it can be very, very convincing when they're telling you this stuff. Remember telling people when there was gold, that was a thing, big thing that was being talked about is gold. You need to buy gold. You need to buy gold. The dollar is going to be worthless, blah, blah, blah. And I would say, wait. They said they're going to sell you gold, right? I would say this to the client. And they go, yeah. And I say, what are they going to take in exchange for their gold? What are they going to ask you to give them for their gold? And they say, money? Oh, you mean the thing that they said was going to be worthless? And they'd be go, oh. Aha. Yeah, maybe this isn't so good. And yet, this is typically what I had to talk people through, right? Numerous seniors ensnared by Metals.com and Chase Metals said that they lost significant chunks of their life savings in an instant. Bing, gone. And thousands, supposedly collectible gold and silver coins they bought, turned out that they included a markup as high as 200% of the value of the metal that they contained. This is what I said over and over. Who is getting rich on this thing? They're telling you you're going to get rich, and the reality is they are. They're the ones raking it in on this deal. On the other end, and you go watch the videos. I got a ton of videos out there on my website. They're still there from 10 years ago, telling people don't fall for this junk. On the other end of Cheryl's phone calls was what two people familiar with the company, including former salesperson, described as a boiler room style sales operation run out of an office in Beverly Hills. According to interviews and internal chats reviewed by the courts, this is the company, this is the media outlet that put this out. The employees were racing to become millionaires by winning the trust of the politically conservative older Americans. And this is just it. You know, when you are really ideologically driven, it is really easy to get you to believe that, and this is why back at the last election, I'm reminded, this is something I did at the last election, and I was saying that businesses have a plan for if Hillary gets in. Businesses have a plan if Trump gets in. And, you know, the reality of it is that all these things that people are scaring you about, you know, it's just fear tactics to get you to buy stuff, and they know how emotionally, how you've bought in emotionally to all of the things going on out there, and how easy it is to drive people by fear. It is way easier to get people to do something if they are afraid than it ever is to get them to do something out of hope for gain. So they don't typically appeal to your desire to become rich. It's not the way this works. They typically appeal to your desire for preserving what you've got. Okay. So let's jump over to here. There's something else. Now, of course, my book that I wrote, which is my newest book, which is Confident Investing, Why Blind Trust is a Poor Strategy. This is something that I updated a book from 10 years ago, and it was interesting. I had to update my book on investing, not because the last book was wrong or anything like that. There were issues with it. I updated the book simply just to give new details, new examples, and talk about how, you know, they just add some data to it. Well, one of the things that I added toward the end of the book, in the appendix of the book, and I went through and I updated all the data through, including all of the financial crisis, the 2008, and in reality, all of the things in the previous book basically said, here's what could happen. Now, I had no way of knowing that what I said could happen would happen literally the next year after I published the book, but, you know, that's another story. But it actually bought me 10 years on the book because I didn't have to rewrite it because I said, yeah, this could happen. And here's the range of expected returns for an aggressive portfolio and all of that. Well, one of the things I wrote toward the end of the book, because in my first edition of my book, which is Above the Maddening Crowd, I actually use price-to-earnings ratios. And I talked about how people try to use price-earnings ratios to predict market direction. If price is really high compared to earnings, then the predictor is that because the price is high compared to the earnings of the company, that the stocks are going to go down. If prices are really low compared to earnings, that means the stock market's going to go up because it's really cheap and the valuations are low, and things are going to bode well. And I basically, in the very first book, said, it doesn't work. Here's a chart to show it doesn't work throughout history. Well, in the second book, of course, there was a Nobel Prize awarded in 2013, and I had to talk about that because it was awarded for something very, very similar, which was called CAPE. It's cyclically adjusted price-earnings ratio. And Shiller was the Nobel Prize winner in regards to that. And it was really against a lot of what I believed, you know, what this particular Nobel was awarded for. So you'll often hear me say that I don't necessarily, just because something's academic, I don't necessarily buy into it. There are a lot of other things that I look at, you know, how persistent is it? How robust is the data? Does it have a story in the cost of capital? And there are a lot of things that I teach in a nerd workshop about this to clients. But here's the thing. Is this Nobel was awarded, and the idea is, hey, we've got a better way of helping us get an idea whether the stock market's overvalued or undervalued, and we're going to call this CAPE, cyclically adjusted price earnings ratio. And in this article, a doubt about a Nobel Prize winner is a valuation ratio. I just said, love it. Love the title already. Doubt about a Nobel Prize winner's evaluation ratio. This was in November 18th issue of Yahoo Finance. It says, it's been an extraordinary year for the stock market, with prices exploding at new record highs, even as earnings growth has been next to non-existent. That dynamic would suggest valuations should be rising. Well, however, one notable measure of stock market value has barely budged: the cyclically adjusted price earnings ratio, the CAPE ratio. Now, of course, this, like I said, this is what the article says. It was made popular by Nobel Prize-winning economist Robert Shiller. CAPE is calculated by taking the price of the S&P 500 and dividing it by the average of 10 years' worth of earnings. And the idea is to get rid of the market cycle, because you have ups and downs. And last hour, if you didn't catch last hour, go get the podcast. I talk about how real estate cycles, the length of them versus the stock market cycle, much shorter cycles with the stock market and with the economy. Now, what happens is, because of the short market cycles, you can really get messed up looking at just P/E ratios. You can really get messed up. I always tell people, don't look at P/E ratios of stocks to determine whether the market's overvalued, undervalued, or anything like that, because it's going to be, you're going to be looking at past P/E ratios, you're going to be looking at past earnings. If you're going to look at anything, and sometimes I do look at this, I will look at forward price earnings ratios. And what forward price earnings ratios does is it says, what is the price of the stock divided by what the earnings are expected to be? It's just more helpful for those of you that are nerdier and like to get into this stuff. But anyway, it says CAPE is above the long-term average, the stock market thought to be expensive, and is likely to offer low returns on average for years to come. So if the CAPE ratio is high, markets, PEs, prices are high compared to earnings. Now they've adjusted away the market cycle by using 10 years of earnings instead of just 1 year. We ought to be able to tell what the market's going to do based on this, right? That's the idea here. There's only one problem. And this is what I pointed out in my new book, Confident Investing. I literally put a chart in there, and I told Michael in here in my office, I said, Michael, you know, I want you to do this research. I've got data right here. Here's the data. It goes back to 1900. Do the data on the market on what the CAPE ratio was compared to what the market did subsequently. I said, look to see if the price is high, if future returns are low, and if the price is low, if future returns are high. Look to see if there's that, because you ought to have a straight line on your chart. And I says, my prediction, it's going to look like a shotgun went off and hit the chart. He comes back and says, whoa, you were right. And I said, yeah, because I figured that because I truly believe that some kind of a little ratio like that to predict market direction just doesn't exist. I mean, you can look for this stuff all over the place, but investors aren't stupid. If they find something that works like this, then all of a sudden it won't work anymore. So, in essence, and people credited Shiller with predicting the burst of the dot-com bubble. Well, you know, here's the thing, folks. You know what? There's a formula. Fame equals one good prediction. I mean, you think about it. How many people want their 15 minutes of fame, right? And, you know, people want to be, I don't know why, because it's just people, it can be a hassle, you know, when people, everybody knows who you are. I'm not complaining. A lot of you, because that's why I don't like TV, because then I can walk through a grocery store and nobody knows who I am. That's cool. But anyway, I've been doing this radio show for 18 years, and, you know, a lot of people, you know, they'll go, oh, yeah, I know who that guy is. But here's the thing. These people will get well known by basically going, hey, I think the market's going to do this. And if they nail it and they predict it, everybody wants their autograph. Everybody wants to interview them. And that's why they try. I'm just convinced that's why a lot of these people try this stuff. You can get their 15 minutes of fame. According to Shiller's data, the CAPE ratio is sitting at about 28.9, lowest level since January, albeit a considerably higher than the long-term average. And by the way, the average is like 17. What gives? The explanation is to be found in the denominator of CAPE, which is the average level of 12 months trailing reported EPS over the prior decade, adjusted for inflation. Now, here's the issue, is that they're looking at all of this data, but what do you got? You've got a numerator that's variable, and you've got a denominator that's variable. That makes for kind of a shaky number, you know, because numerator goes up, and all of a sudden now the ratio is high. Numerator goes down, now it's low, but then you've got the denominator moving can actually make the ratio higher or low. It just makes for a disaster in trying to use it for a predictive vehicle. And hence, that's why I tell people, don't pay attention to this stuff. When you see people telling you, this market's high, it's way higher than it's supposed to be, and it's going to go down because of this and that, and this won a Nobel Prize, you ought to listen to it. Don't necessarily look at all academic research as being helpful and valuable. That's my point. All right, so tell you what, right after this, I'm going to take a quick break and be back. I'm going to talk a little bit about... oh, some things going on in China, some things happening over there. It's interesting when you have a country that wants to control everything, how out of control it can actually get. It can be a problem. Paul Winkler, listening to the Investor Coaching Show right here on Supertalk 99.7 WTN. I'll be back right after this. All right, I'm back here on the Investor Coaching Show. Paul Winkler. Okay, so the website, paulwinkler.com, you can get the podcast there, of course. And we got some video. We've been working on some video things, ideas, and changing some of these. I can't wait. Man, we have gotten some really cool, we've just got some good upgrades to some things, and I think that it's just going to be even a better teaching tool as going forward. So you can also go there on the website and subscribe to the videos as well, and just get an email from us when we update those videos. So you can check that out at paulwinkler.com if you can't figure it out. Over there on the right-hand side where it says contact us, you can go put your information, just say, hey, can you help me out with this? We'll be glad to help you out. You know, the more the merrier watching those things. The other place you can do is like the Facebook page. If you like our Paul Winkler Creating Confident Investors, if you like that page, also you'll get heads up when we put new videos out there as well, because we also put that out there, you know, so that you can make sure that you're staying up to date with what's going on. And we've got a lot of things coming. Just stay tuned. It's been, oh, man, just trying to get some of that stuff done on the website has been a real challenge. There's so much to do. But I'm excited about it. Really cool stuff. Okay, so let me talk about something here, because this was, you know, something I watch from afar and wonder, you know, where is it going to lead? But China's slowing economy, rising inflation, handcuffs central bank. Okay, so countries all around the world have central banks that control their money supply. And you have that. It's, it used to be that we didn't have that type of a thing back in the 1800s, and we had bank runs. Inside of every 10 years, there'd be a lot of bank runs throughout a century. I forgot how many of them there were in the 1800s, but many. And then, of course, and if you've never heard me tell this story before, it's kind of cool. It's just interesting. J.P. Morgan used to be called upon to help out the banks if they were running into trouble. If they were worried about a bank run, the government officials would call up J.P. Morgan and say, "Can you help us out?" Because they knew he was the only person with deep enough pockets to do it. And then he would just say, "Yep, come to New York, fellers, and come on, hang out with me, and we'll talk about this." And he would make sure that everybody's deposits at the banks would stay, or that they would be okay. If they withdrew their money, that their bank withdrawals would be covered. Because, of course, when you put money in a bank, it's not necessarily in the vaults. It's lent back out. And you had to have somebody do that. Well, he was covering those things, and then they end up having to have a Federal Reserve. And, there's all kinds of interesting stuff about that. You can actually go, if you never heard me talk about this before, it's kind of fun, a little bit of a rabbit trail that you can go off of, and go watch, Wizard of Oz. And, Wizard of Oz, OZ, ounce gold, about the gold standard. So that whole thing, there's like the straw man was the farmer, and the tin man was the manufacturer, and the yellow brick road was, gold, and the gold standard, and all of those characters were characters from the late 1800s. So it was based on that book that was written, and that's all about that. You can actually go Wikipedia, I think, has something on it. It's interesting stuff. You never knew that, Dorothy was... There was more to that than met the eye, right? So check that out. But anyway, China, their slowing economy. Now, what China has been trying to do is take the American experiment in capitalism. And, of course, the whole idea back in the 1700s, we have this invisible hand, let free markets reign, Adam Smith, Wealth of Nations, and we could grow an economy at a faster pace if we let people become wealthy, because the more wealth that they've got, the more that they're incentivized to be able to accumulate wealth and not stopped from that, they will produce things that are good and they'll use their creative juices to produce better things. And the reality of it is, all men are not created equal. Men and women are not created equal when it comes down to abilities. Some people are way more creative than others. Some people are way more inclined to take risks than others. And the reality of it is that there are some people out there that are super motivated. And they're going to do something if they can keep the fruits of their labors. We all know that, right? Well, that was Wealth of Nations, and let the market decide who is offering something of value. Let's let the market decide if the product being produced is worthy because they can vote with their dollars. If they don't like something, if we don't like something, guess what? I'm not going to buy it. If I don't think this computer's any good, I'm not going to buy the computer. If I don't think the product tastes good, I'm not going to have it. I'm not going to bring it home and feed it to my family, right? Well, with China, they decided, well, maybe we can combine this with an authoritarian government where we have somebody in charge, but we let some people get rich. And we let some people become wealthy, and then they'll hire people to run factories, and those people will allow some of those people running their factories to accumulate wealth. And then what we'll do is we'll hire people and we'll control them by making sure that they realize that there are a bunch of other people that want their job that are right outside the factory gates. So you work for a factory there, and there may be a sign up that says, "Hey, you know what? Your replacement's sitting right outside the gate. You better shape up or ship out." And hence, that is that's how control is maintained, right? And, back in the 1970s, as I talked about a little bit earlier, there was this whole concern that countries like Russia, another authoritarian economy, was going to take over because they were producing more. The government could control things and they could have greater productivity because they would be able to control the means of production, was the idea. The only problem was that they were producing junk and the free market wasn't determining what was produced and what was not produced and what was bought and not bought, right? And problem was, they're producing junk and nobody wanted this stuff. Well, China is in the midst of some issues right now, which is kind of interesting. According to the Wall Street Journal, China is sticking with rate cutting strategy. So what they're doing, their central bank is saying, hey, let's cut interest rates. Let's cut some interest rates and try to get the economy to get going again. The only problem is it doesn't necessarily work as well in China as it does in freer economies, according to the Wall Street Journal. They've been reducing their interest rates, but it has not been going through the system quite the way they wanted to. The cuts are indicating, the journal says, they're indicating that authorities want broadly lower borrowing costs to spur the slowing economy. But given inflationary pressure from rising food prices, that's what happens when you refuse to import food that you need for your citizens. You got to find someplace else to buy it. And if somebody else is producing it, but they can't produce it in the numbers or the amounts that you want, you progressively have to go to the next highest seller as far as price. You have to go to the next highest bidder as far as who's going to provide you that food. And now they're dealing with inflation from rising food prices and a stagnant economy. Does this sound familiar to anybody? Can anybody say Carter years? China going through the Carter years? Stagflation? Stagnant economy with inflation? That's what we dealt with back in the 1970s. And it was rotten. And then you had concerns about overheating the residential real estate market. And you know, that's another problem that they've had over there, their residential market shooting up like crazy. And they said that easing costs for borrowers while keeping a grip on riskier forms of lending is providing tricky for Beijing. You know, so in other words, let me just translate this. In other words, centralized control always fails at some point. You know, how long is it going to take for it to fail? I don't know, but I just predict that this experiment can't last forever. You know, centralized control doesn't work because you don't have the end consumer making the decisions on the buying and selling and controlling the economy. The commanding heights, as they call it. Doesn't tend to end that well. I'll take a quick break. And who knows? I mean, you just look at this and go, well, you know, this is you wonder, what are all the tariffs for? Well, maybe this is kind of explaining some of what's going on. And maybe I just wonder, are things maybe a little worse than what we hear in the media? Or maybe, because remember Russia, that whole thing, it was like a shock when that economy came crumbling down. It was a shock to everybody. I remember it really well and go, whoa, wait a minute. This was supposed to be an economy that was supposed to be better, you know, some of the economists said, than ours. And everything was so great. And then, whoa, where did this come from? Who knows? Who knows where it will lead? But I always find the news interesting when it comes down to it. And that's, hey, this is why we diversify like crazy, right? You can't predict the future. I'll take hey, you want to help somebody retire well? Well, I'm going to talk about what you can do for them right after this. What can you do for somebody that wants to retire well? I'm Paul Winkler. You're listening to the Investor Coaching Show right here on Supertalk 99.7 WTN. All right. I'm back here. On the Investor Coaching Show, I'm Paul Winkler, talking about the world of money and investing. And this, you know, I saw this. You want somebody to retire well. What can you do for them? Now, if you missed previous segments, I talked a little bit about those people that don't do so well in retirement and the people that do much better in retirement. I think, when did I do that? I guess that was the last hour, wasn't it? Nah, I don't even remember when I did that. That's terrible. Yeah, I think it was. It was toward the end of middle end of last hour or something like that. Oh, you know, it was the beginning of last hour. I didn't think about when I was talking about this. This is a fascinating personality traits that lead people to go broke. And the podcast, paulwinkler.com, you can check it out there. And of course, I'm my normal ADD self today, so I'm all over the place, and that is just the way it normally is. But do you want to help people retire well? You can do this for them. this guy Michael Snizek was has been working for 41 years, and he was looking for a way to transition to the next chapter of his life's retirement. And that sounds easy, but a lot of people really, really struggle with that. You know, I have conversations every single week with people, and they're just, I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know if I'm going to get bored. I don't know if I'm going to be into it. And I says, well, you know, give it a shot. Keep some doors open. You know, you may like it. You may hate it. And, you know, don't burn any bridges. You know, maybe you might want to go back to do what you used to do and be a consultant for the company you used to work for or something like that. Because some people, you know, they get into this issue where, man, I don't feel needed anymore. I don't feel necessary. It's not, life doesn't have the meaning for me anymore. And there's only so much golf you can play and so many friends that you can go visit. And they want to kick you out of the house, as one of my clients was saying this week. You know, you visit for a while and then they're like, get out of here. Okay, I've had enough. Go home. Well, this guy's looking for a way to transition to retirement. 63-year-old from New Jersey has to answer a lot of questions first, though. Such as, will he want to find another job? And maybe you look around and you go, hey, this is something I always wanted to do, and I never did it because I knew that the job would pay too little, but gee, I don't really need as much money anymore because I've got my retirement savings, I've got Social Security, maybe a pension. Maybe you can go out and do that other thing you always wanted to do. And one of the guys in here, his dad took off and, you know, started stuffing dead deers. Dead deer, right? Dead deers. You don't put an S on the end, Paul. And anyway, he ended up getting into a whole different field from engineering. I mean, what a change. Should he continue to live in the same community was another question. You know, do you want to pick up and go head to another community, live in another area? That's another question. Maybe you want to live more where your kids are or where grandkids are, where other family members, maybe move back to where you grew up or whatever. After reading this, he was reading a self-help book on this, and he was dealing with some, he actually hired a life coach is what he did. And he goes, whoa, wait a minute, this is interesting. Maybe there's more to life than I thought. So he hires a life coach. And I laughed because, you know, this is something that, you know, 20 years ago when I started this show, of course, the name of my company back then was The Investor Coach, you know, because I was looking at coaching, you know, the concepts in coaching and getting a more fulfilled life and the things that you don't typically think about, because money is a whole lot more than just dollars. What money doesn't necessarily make you happy. It doesn't make you fulfilled. You know, the line is always moving on how much you need. I want more. And then you never really get to enough. You got to really start to think more deeply than that. And you think a little bit about, you know, what is my purpose? What am I here for? You only have so many years on this planet. How do you get to purpose? Well, a lot of times the best way to get to that is to ask the right questions. You know, so I would actually bring people through exercises. I still do it in groups where we go through True Purpose for Money, where we talk about, you know, what is my purpose? What am I here for? What do I want to accomplish? And what are the things that I value? And how can I express them with my money? I mean, money has a purpose. You know, you can have lots of money and no purpose, and that's a disaster waiting to happen. Or you can have purpose but have no money, and that's just fine. You can have lots of purpose and have no money and live a completely fulfilled life. You know, money is just a tool. But, you know, a lot of people have money demons, as I call them, you know, which are hang-ups we have about money. It's one of my favorite workshops to teach and one I'm going to be teaching in the coming year. I'll see that clients, you know, watch out for the schedule because I'm going to be teaching this workshop, and it's a really fun workshop. And it's just the things that we complain about, the things we worry about regarding money. And typically when we complain about things, it's because we're missing information. I don't understand something. You know, so this is literally what they're talking about. How to help somebody retire well? Get them into coaching. Get them working with somebody that actually coaches, not just deals with money, but also deals with the other aspects of aging. You know, you have, you know, your future view. What is it you want the future to look like? Well, you know, design it. As one of my clients said a few weeks ago, he came in here and I brought him through this process 20 years ago, and he and his wife are just ecstatically happy. And they come to the workshop. They're like two little kids. And they're both retired. He was a doctor. And she was assistant, worked with him in the office and helped him out with the practice. And I said, so what's going on? You're as happy as I've ever seen you. You're really doing great. What's going on? And he'd been happy for, you know, he literally took coaching seriously. I mean, this guy took it seriously when I first introduced the idea to him. And, you know, some people get into it. Some people just, that's garbage. Mind mumbo jumbo. And they don't get into it at all. And I look at it and go, man, it has the potential to change your life. I'm not going to make you do it, but, you know, it's really, really great stuff. When you start living life and thinking about what you want to do next, where you want to go, what you want your life to look like. Well, he did that. He took it really seriously. And he just made the comment a couple weeks ago. He says, I'm living life by design. And I said, I love it. Perfect. That's it. It's life by design. And, you know, in the article, they're talking about, you know, the guy worked with the coach and he was evaluating which avenues were going to offer the greatest quality of life, create a framework for the future. And that's what I always bring people through, creating your future view. And, you know, you break up your life into various segments. What I do when I do this, I'll go, okay, so I'm going to break your life into segments. You're going to have the spiritual part of your life. You're going to have money part of your life. You're going to have career part of your life. You're going to have friendship part of your life. You're going to have family part of your life. And you're going to have hobbies part of your life. You know, so you'll have your break your life in all these segments. And then analyze each segment and go, okay, what do I want to see here? What do I want this to look like? And coaching in this is really important because a lot of times we won't do this stuff on our own, right? We just don't take the steps to do it on our own. And it's because we don't necessarily know the right questions to ask, and it's always good to have somebody to bounce it off of, and that's exactly what he said in the article. He said, I was able to use him as an effective sounding board. Now, this is the key to coaching, is to not necessarily tell you the right answer to things, but a lot of it is in asking the right questions, because a lot of times you, out there, you know the right things. You know yourself. You know what you want, but you just don't know how to get to it. Now he says a person's retirement plan can't be wrapped up under a Christmas tree, but learning how to have a good one might be one of the greatest gifts that you can give. So true. You know, I look at this practice and I tell people all the time now because it just hit me one day. I feel like I'm in a time machine. Because I see people in their 20s, I see them in their 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s, even in their 90s. And I see the different phases of life that people go through and how their lives change as they get older. And I tell them what to expect. Here's what you're going to be dealing with. And, you know, these are the things that you need to prepare for. Now, it says thousands of Americans retire every day, though they might not have plans for what they intend to do in the next chapter of their lives. The concept of retirement is rapidly changing in the U.S. Until relatively recently, most Americans generally worked until 65, then moved to a warmer location, spend the rest of their days. Now they're doing all kinds of different things. They're volunteering. They're doing part-time work. They're, you know, opting for longer retirements. They may be, you know, doing things that they wanted to do all their lives, but they put it off and they never did it. Spend time with people that they want to spend time with. Now, they end the article saying, you know, not everyone needs to have a clear vision of what the next part of their is going to be in their lives. But having no idea what to do and sitting idly by as the years go on could be dangerous. People suffer cognitive decline and physical impairments if they're not active in their older ages. So true. You know, one of the things that I actually teach in the workshop on purpose is incidences of heart disease and cognitive decline. One of the biggest factors regarding these things and reducing their incidences is purpose, having purpose, knowing what your purpose is and getting down to it. You know, so this is something we're going to be, we're expanding. We're going to continue to expand in the practice. All right. I tell you what, take a quick break and be right back after this. You're listening to the Investor Coach. I've got this thing on Social Security. I want to talk about this just in a second. Some of the actuarial adjustments in Social Security. Right after this on the Investor Coaching Show on Super Talk 99.7 WTN. Manhattan Investor Coaching Show, Paul Winkler. PaulWinkler.com is the website, and you can, of course, get the podcast there. You can go and download there and subscribe to that, no matter what your device. Next, one of the things I'm going to do next hour, you got to make sure you stay tuned for this, because I'm going to be talking about, well, you know, one of the things I talk about here quite often is how political points of view, your political point of view, can affect your investing habits. Is it just you, or is it way, way broader than that? And it's fascinating, so you got to check that out. All right, so I'll get to that next hour. But anyway, how far off are the actuarial adjustments for Social Security benefits? Actually, this is very interesting for MarketWatch. The option to claim Social Security early was introduced 60 years ago. So at age 62, you can actually start to get your Social Security. That's the earliest age of eligibility. Now, to keep the lifetime benefits constant, on average, those claiming at 62 receive 20% less than monthly benefits than if they try to claim it at 65. That's what it used to be. Actually, I don't know if it's a typo in the article or what, but it's actually, you get a 5% difference between 62 and 63, and it's technically a 13.33% difference over the next couple of years. So not too far off. They're pretty close. But anyway, the option to claim between 65 and 70 is an actuarially fair basis stems from 1983 Social Security amendments. Now, everybody remember what was going on in 1983? High interest rates, right? Very high. Interest rates hit their peak in 1981, in fact. Now, as they said, much has changed since these actuarial adjustments were introduced. Interest rates have declined. Life expectancy has increased, of course, right? People are living longer now. Longevity improvements have made much greater for high earners than low earners. You actually can, you will find that if you look at the life expectancies for low-income people versus high-income people, high-income people tend to live longer. So often what we're doing in the financial planning process is I will use actuarial tables when I'm doing planning for people, which are based on longer life expectancies, because typically who am I doing planning for? People that have saved money. And you got to realize that people that have saved money, they have access to better health care. Maybe they have better habits than people that don't have as much. It's just the reality of things. Are the historical adjustments still actuarially correct? Well, longer life expectancy reduces the impact of additional year of earlier late claiming would call for smaller adjustments. Now, in other words, longer life expectancies make the delayed claiming better. If people are living longer now, it makes more sense to delay because the benefit increase every year that you get. You know, it's for 5/12 of 1% for every month that you delay between 62 and 63. And then it changes to 5/9% for the next 3 years. For every month, then it goes 8/12 or 2/3% for every month that you wait after age 66, you know, 67 and 68, 69. So you go up 8% per year. Now, lower interest rates, which raise the cost of late versus early claiming, would also call for reducing the penalty for early claiming. So basically what they're saying here is that late claiming, in other words, putting off your Social Security benefit till later, is more advantageous than it should be based on today's interest rates and based on life expectancies. You know, and if you, and there's really actually a neat chart in this article, if you happen to pull it up yourself, it's in MarketWatch, how far off is the actual adjustment of Social Security benefits? And it goes through history, and you notice that the chart starts off in 1960 at about 1. In other words, you're about indifferent between taking Social Security at age 62 versus 65. It's actuarially fair either way. But then, all of a sudden, early retirement made a ton of sense in the early 1980s. So I'm thinking as I'm reading this, going, well, you wonder if maybe some of the attitudes that people have where they get to 62 and, man, they can't wait to start taking Social Security. And maybe some of that attitude is just due to the fact that, well, it used to be not a bad deal to take it early. It was actually quite a good deal. And then toward the late 80s, it wasn't such a great deal. It was okay again. You know, all the way through the 90s, it was an okay deal to take Social Security earlier. So you had a pretty long period of time where taking it early actually made some sense up to about the year 2000. Then all of a sudden, from the year 2000, and it spiked in 2008, but it came back down again, it didn't make a heck of a lot of sense. You know, so early doesn't make a whole lot of sense right now if you actually do the numbers on this. Now, they said that as life expectancy has increased and interest rates have declined, the cost to the government of individual claiming at 65 and at 70 have narrowed, and today the ratio looks about right, they say. But, you know, here's the thing. The evaluation of adjustments presented above was based on life expectancy of the average worker. So it looks about right for who? The average worker. Well, what did I just say? If you're a listener to this radio show, you're probably preparing for retirement. You may have prepared for retirement, or you're going to be well prepared for retirement, which would make you not average, which would make you one of those people that would likely live longer, which makes it more sense for you to put it off. And, you know, as changes come about, you know, in the system, I think what might happen, they may shift from age 62 to age 70, early retirement 62. Late retirement, age 70, they may push it to 64 and 72. You know, who knows? It'd be just interesting. You know, as demographics change and demographics impact the U.S., how is Social Security going to change? People say it's going to run out of money. And I've been saying, you know what? If it runs out, if it runs down, it's just a trust fund, which just means a reduction in benefits, and your early filers and late filers will just both be reduced. And so it makes sense for a lot of people to wait, but it ought to be done individually for you. Don't just listen to what everybody does and do it. Paul Winkler, Investor Coaching Show.
This is Paul Winkler. Hope you enjoyed this week's edition of the Investor Coaching Show. If you want to learn more about what we do, go to our website, paulwinkler.com. You can watch some of the videos there, and if you're not already a client, you can set up a free initial consultation. Till next week, I'm Paul Winkler, reminding you that I believe that educated investors are more confident investors, and confident investors are more successful investors. Have a great one.